On the show today, we have NCUA Chairman Rodney Hood talking about NCUA's Access Financial Inclusion Initiative. Some great stuff here from the chairman, so check it out. Before we get into our interview, I just want to give you a quick heads up on our CU Knowledge Hub page. It is our page that's just loaded with free downloadable content, which includes white papers, webinars, product guides, case studies, industry analysis, and a whole lot more. And it's all provided by experts and vendors within the credit union industry. So go check it out today. That's CU Knowledge Hub. And now on to the interview. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have a very special guest, Mr. Rodney Hood, Chairman of NCUA. Mr. Hood, Mr. Chairman, how are you? How are you doing today?
I am great, Mike. It's so good to be with you again. It's been probably 7 or 8 months since we were last together when you had me on your show doing the Government Affairs Conference. So it's good to be with you, albeit virtually as opposed to being in person. But it's great to see you again.
Well, thank you. Likewise. And this is, you know, better. This is kind of the plan B for everything this year, for sure. And but yeah, it's great to have you on the program. Appreciate your time as always. I know you have a busy schedule and you're doing some fantastic things there at the NCUA for credit unions all over the country. So we really appreciate that. And today we want to talk about something really exciting, something that's very near and dear to your heart as well, is the NCUA Access Financial Inclusion Initiative. So what, I mean, just to kind of get a lay of the land here, Mr. Chairman, what is Access and how did it start?
Well, Mike, first and foremost, let me thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about this new initiative that was just launched last week. If I tell you I'm excited, that's an understatement. I am beyond thrilled that we have Access, which is advancing communities through credit, education, stability, and support. And what this program is, it's all about promoting financial inclusion in underserved, under-resourced communities, communities that have never been a part of the economic and financial mainstream. And if anything, it continues my lifelong journey around wanting to promote shared prosperity around the country. And there are some major pillars of it. So credit, for instance, the credit piece of Access means how do we promote safe and affordable financial products, such as small dollar loans. We live in a society where 40% of American households pre-COVID could not come up with $400 in the event of a family emergency. So this program is going to have programs and opportunities and products like the PALS 2 loan that we created at NCUA. Mm-hmm. What that's going to really provide relief for some of these underserved communities who could not have access to dollars, small dollar loans. And that's going to be especially helpful in the age of COVID. Education is another pillar within the Access Initiative, promoting financial education, financial coaching and well-being. Inform consumers, make better financial decisions. Inform credit union members will not go to pernicious payday lenders for their small dollar loans. They will get those loans and opportunities through a federally insured credit union. Also through education, it means partnering with groups, maybe it be NeighborWorks America or Operation Hope, these wonderful results-oriented nonprofit organizations that can really help individuals learn more about the economy, about their credit reports, and how do they provide a future for their families. You can't do a lot of this, though, without one of the other pillars within Access, and that is stability. How do we in the credit union system support those credit unions that are low-income designated, community development financial institutions, or MDIs? How do we do it? We provide them with stability by providing them with mentoring dollars, providing them with grants, opportunities so that we can invest in those credit unions to better serve marginalized communities. Of the 5,000 or so credit unions that I get to oversee as chairman of NCUA, Mike, can you believe that almost 50% of those, roughly 2,400, are community development or low-income designated credit unions? And then we have about 500 that are MDIs. So a lot of the credit union system is doing this book of business already, but we want to make sure we give them the relief, the product guidance that they need so they can continue bringing folks in to the economic mainstream. And then another pillar within Access is support. Mm-hmm. How do we build support mechanisms for bringing folks for job opportunities? I, through the board's help last year, we launched the Second Chance Initiative. Mm-hmm. That's an initiative where folks who have paid their debts and dues to society, who have had nonviolent, non-criminal offenses, who heretofore had never been able to work in a credit union, they now are able to do so through our Second Chance Initiative. We also want to make sure that we're building a pipeline of talent as well to join our workforce, such as creating internship opportunities for marginalized communities. We had a wonderful, dedicated group of young high school students this past summer called the Pathways Program. And these individuals were able to learn about credit, learn about the economy, learn about examination and insurance. And as I told this group of bright youngsters, I am hoping that once you guys graduate from high school, go to college, maybe you all will come back someday, not just to work with us initially, maybe you'll come back on the board or maybe even as one of our chairmen. So I am really thinking boldly about how do we build a pipeline. And again, it's not going to be sustainable to have affordable products if people don't have jobs that pay good wages and good opportunities. So that's why the support piece is, again, around providing opportunities for marginalized communities to have good jobs, and then in turn, access to affordable financial services.
So how does access work? Because I know it kind of builds on some programs that you guys have already, they're already underway. So how does it actually work? Is it credit unions reaching out to you guys? Is the NCOA reaching out to credit unions, or is it vice versa?
It is a combination thereof, Mike. That's a really good thing. And you're right. A lot of the initiatives that I just sort of shared with you around the Second Chance Initiative, The internship piece, the PALS 2 program, those are programs and tools that we've had in our arsenal. What we're doing now is we're harnessing all of those things. So we have pretty much tailwind as we are now pivoting from some of those activities to really make it broader and more expansive. When I say expansive, it means that this initiative is not just sitting in one particular group within NCUA. Mm-hmm. For the first time since I've been there, this is a collaborative effort with all of our lines of business. That means that our representatives in the Office of Examination and Insurance are working side by side with the individuals from the Credit Union Resource Expansion Team, known as CURE. They're working with our Office of Consumer Financial Protection. They're working with our General Counsel. The list goes on. So I have, with the help of our Executive Director Larry Fazio, we have a cross-collaborative team of folks who are all spearheading different components of the Access Initiative because we want it to be sustainable, and we also want it to be fully embedded into our agency's DNA and also in turn being a part of the credit union industry's DNA. And we know it is because basically what this boils down to is epitomizing people helping people. So that's why I'm glad to know that it's really going to be implemented throughout their whole agency. And what are some of the things that you're going to see us doing as a result?
Yeah.
You're going to see us looking at opportunities to refresh and modernize a lot of our regulations. As you know, when you and I spoke in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. it seems like years ago, but it was just 8 or so months. I talked about then how my regulatory philosophy, regulation needs to be effective and not excessive. With that being said, we certainly want to ensure that there are no excessive regulations that are preventing credit unions from reaching the potential to serve a broader array of underserved borrowers. So we're making sure that we're going to look at some of those outdated, outmoded regulations to see what can be done to modernize them. Similarly, we'll be looking at policies and programs that also can enhance greater financial inclusion. We're going to also continue to partner with some of our other folks from the other regulatory agencies, whether it be the FDIC or the OCC or even CFPB, because they also have financial education and financial literacy tools. I'm especially pleased that CFPB has tools around financial education that are spearheaded and targeted for individuals with disabilities or differently abled. So we're going to continue to work in partnership efforts as well.
Oh,
and I think, as you hear, all of this is just simply, again, about enhancing the opportunities to bring other folks into the financial mainstream. If credit unions don't do it, we certainly don't want to have individuals going off into the hands of pernicious payday lenders.
No doubt. And especially in these uncertain times too, because people are sometimes people get so desperate that they do reach out to those folks. So it's good to have credit unions really being that foundation there for sure. And I also like how you are reaching out to these other organizations in true credit union form to collaborate and work with these folks. You know, that's just typical credit union. So thank you for doing that.
Collaboration is so key. You're so right. And I look at it because no one can do this alone. Right. No one can expect to accomplish all of the things that it's going to take to help individuals who perhaps don't trust financial institutions, have never walked inside one for that matter. Yeah. So we are going to have to build linkages and collaborative efforts with other trusted community partners. So that's why I'm glad. And again, to your point, Mike, it certainly does illustrate the power of the credit unions. I mean, we grew out of the Great Depression. We grew when folks in the 1930s were leaving the automobile plants and the steel factories, and they couldn't get traditional bank credits. What did they do? These individuals galvanized and marshaled their resources to create today's system of cooperative finance that we call our credit union system. So essentially, I like to tell folks that this initiative takes us back to our beginning. It reminds us how credit unions have always been there to help people of modest means, what we now today would say low to moderate income and underserved, but it really tethers us to that mission.
Yes, and we are the original disruptors, so it's good to...
We are the original disruptors.
It's good to step back. I want to ask you the most obvious question here, Rod, Mr. Chairman, but I want to get your take on it. So why create this initiative? Because you've said in the past, financial inclusion is the civil rights issue of the 21st century. So is that kind of the driving force behind this, or is there more to it than that?
That is the driving force. One, because I haven't been in financial services, Mike, as you know, 25 plus years now, working really on the front lines of helping bring economic development and urban renewal to communities that really need these services most. So I've seen how transformative it is when that family never thought they could own a home. And then next thing you know, they go through financial education through a NeighborWorks America affiliate, and then they're able to get a home that they can call their own. And they're having that as a future for their children. Yeah. They're able to really be a part of the economic mainstream. So to your point, yes, these are all things that I've been enunciating and articulating for the better part of my career, but what has now transpired is not a surprise to you or any of our credit union listeners. We, in the age of the COVID-19 pandemic and the tragic murder that we saw surrounding George Floyd, we saw a number of activities coming together that really demonstrated that communities of color are disproportionately not a part of the economic mainstream. Mm-hmm. And also communities of color are disproportionately impacted in a deleterious manner when it comes to health outcomes that we've seen through COVID-19. So all of this together just really, in my opinion, solidified, catalyzed the need for us to harness these activities and to give them an opportunity to be substantive and transformative. A lot of the things that we've been able to do, when I mentioned Second Chance and PALS program and some of those types of activities, those were great in and of themselves, but now we're looking at doing things that are comprehensive, game-changing, and transformative. And to do that, it's not it being done as a one-off, but now being more strategic and more deliberate in the types of things that we're wanting to do. And I would go back to earlier, why credit unions? Credit unions, I think, are uniquely positioned to address these activities through the Access Initiative because they've been doing it for nearly 100 years now. Yeah. They already have demonstrated the ability to look after their member owners when they need them the most. So it kind of ties into that philosophy. And I'm proud to say the credit unions that have heard about this initiative, they have been calling, asking how we can support them in it. I've also heard from other groups. For instance, yesterday I gave a talk to the Federal Home Loan Bank presidents, and they also are thinking the role that they play in sustainable home ownership. They definitely see a linkage between that and the credit piece around access. So you're going to continue to see this initiative just continue to take on new stakeholders for collaborative approaches to this. And again, we're looking forward to maybe making some game-changing goals and really touching a lot of lives indelibly.
And the benefit to credit, I mean, again, probably another obvious question here, but what's the benefit message here for credit unions as well as their members? Because it really sounds like this is kind of laying some even stronger groundwork, a stronger foundation for credit unions to really expand their footprint and help folks who are in need.
It does. And again, the benefit for credit unions, especially as I mentioned that we have those minority depositories, which we have about 500, and we have about 2,400 low-income designated credit unions. So, and even the other credit unions that have none of those designations, there is room for the whole credit union industry to play a part in this initiative because it takes us back to service. I mean, again, I remember going to the Credit Union Museum where I see the plaque before my eyes, even as I look into your camera today. It's like not for profit, not for charity, but for service. Mm-hmm. I look at this as an opportunity for credit unions to demonstrate service. It also is an opportunity for them to really reach that next group of members, or those prospective members who perhaps have been on the economic fringes. Yeah. They are now going to have tools and products in place to help the millennials, to help immigrant communities, to help folks who have been literally waiting from the sidelines. Well, now we're going to cast a net to let them know that we, credit unions, want to be that lender of choice, that mm-hmm. that relationship provider. And this brings me to a point. This is not about a relationship that we're going to go and say, oh, we're going to make X knows. This is about not transactions, but it's about relationship building and building that member-centric experience for individuals. So those are some of the things that can come from credit union engagement. I think it's going to help them as we look at demographic shifts, where they're going to be uniquely positioned to respond to the demographic shifts by having tools that will appeal to communities of color, rural communities, low to moderate income, native or indigenous communities. These are all folks that credit unions are working with today. But I think as we look at demographic shifts, there's going to be even more of an opportunity for them to work to attract these individuals to the credit union system. Today, we have about 122.4 million members of credit unions. That's nearly a third of the American public. Mm-hmm. Who's to say that we're not going to see that number continue to grow because of products and tools such as this? So, Mike, I would just ask the credit unions that want to be directly involved, go to our website. We do have a website uniquely positioned to talk about this particular initiative at mycreditunion.gov. And also for credit unions, just continue to look at using fintech tools to provide solutions, to continue to support small businesses and entrepreneurs. And also, credit unions, please, please continue to support financial education and financial capability. Those are all things that you can already do right now that will indirectly impact underserved communities.
And access is just going to boost that even much more, I'm assuming. So that's kind of the goal here, right? Is to really give these a boost. And as you're talking, I keep thinking about just one aspect of it, just the payday lending. If you can get people out of that vicious cycle mm-hmm. and get them into a credit union, like you said, and get them a solid financial footing to home ownership, automobile loan, all that type of stuff. Man, it's just, there's so much upside here.
Lots of upside there. You're right, because the payday lenders, they're not going to invest in them around financial education, financial literacy. I'll tell you a quick story. There's a credit union that I went to visit outside of Baltimore, Maryland recently. They have a nonprofit that's in that particular credit union, and the nonprofit is providing financial counseling and coaching to the members of that particular credit union. Young lady was a bus driver. She had been with the city of Baltimore for a number of years, mm-hmm. but had always relied on payday lenders. What was the first thing that this credit union did? They were able to give her a small dollar loan at a good interest rate that she could afford. And in so doing, she was able to build a credit score. She's now been able to go from a 540 credit score to a 730 credit score, where she now has a main credit card that's not one of the usurious ones, but one that has a really good interest rate. And in addition, she is now, I've been told, on the pathway to getting her very own home. This is an investment that the credit union made that no pernicious payday lender would ever made. So that's why, to your point, the credit unions are about providing long-term solutions, building that relationship. And this young lady is now going to be forever a part of the credit union system, I dare say, because they met her needs, and she was now able to be a part of now what I would say the economic mainstream.
Yeah, and what's going to happen from that is that she's going to tell her friends and family, and they're going to tell their friends and family, mm-hmm. and the word of mouth advertising just from that one story is going to be huge for that credit.
Yes, so, the cycle of really debt cool. will be broken for good, yeah. and the dependence upon these other alternative forms of credit will be removed, and her children can now see what it's like to see her mom be able to save for the future and to give them a brighter future and hope for college and all the other things that come with, again, being a part of the economic mainstream. And Mike, I'd be remiss if I didn't sort of go back around financial inclusion, in my opinion, mm-hmm. being a civil rights issue. What people today fail to realize is that your FICO score, your credit score, determines where you get to live, because either you're renting an apartment or buying a home. Right. And you can't do either without a good FICO score. You can't get a good FICO score if you don't have a good paying job, such as why I was really pleased with the Second Chance Initiative. Mm-hmm. You can't do a number of things in American society without being a part of the economic mainstream. So that's why when I'm saying financial inclusion is a civil rights issue, it's not a platitude. It's because I've seen how the disproportionate number of people of color or low to moderate income, those are the folks who don't get to live where they want, send the children where they want to go to school, or buy the cars they want. So if we can provide them with the tools to economic well-being, then they will be able to be a part of the full stream American economy, no longer living on the fringe. Right. And again, that's why I look at this as a civil right, just as critically important as voting and all the other issues mm-hmm. that we see out there on the horizon.
Agreed. Well spoken. And to have credit unions be that foundation, and again, that driving force for all this stuff is just makes it that much better. So really cool stuff. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for taking time out today. Anything else to add here? Any final words of wisdom on this?
Yes, I just want to thank you and just all your listeners and viewers for really taking the time to listen to today's podcast. I just, again, want you to know that we do have a dedicated page on the ncua.gov okay. that really includes additional information on how we are enabling financial inclusion through credit, education, stability, and support. And the website is ncua.gov/access. So again, I just think that everyone in society deserves the opportunity to participate in the financial mainstream. So we remain steadfastly dedicated to ensuring that credit union products are there, attainable, accessible, and affordable. So thank you, Mike. And I do hope the next time I see you, we'll be sitting across from each other the way we were at the Government Affairs Conference earlier this year. So bless you and your family.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I agree too. That can't happen any sooner. So I'm hoping that that happens really quickly as well. And thank you for your time. Again, I know you're a busy, busy guy, so we appreciate the time that you have here. And the access, I can't, we're just at the surface. We're just scratching the surface of this. So I can't wait to see what comes of it here in the next months, years, all that good stuff. So thank you so much. Appreciate
it. I'll come back and give you an update. How's that?
Perfect. Look forward to it. All right, Mr. Chairman, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work, okay?
You too, sir. Thank you. Bye. All right.